This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. As a podcast listener, you've heard from us before. Today, let's hear from our members about what online therapy has done for them.
I would recommend my therapist 1,000 times over. She has truly changed my life.
The day after my first session, my friends and family said I sounded like myself again for the first time in weeks.
You deserve to invest in your well-being. Visit BetterHelp.com to see what it can do for you. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Do you remember what it's like being in your 20s? I sometimes look back at that period of my life and laugh just as much as I cringe. If you do the same, then you've got to watch Queenie, the new original series on Hulu. Who is Queenie? Queenie is a 20-something-year-old living in London. She's facing all the firsts. First major heartbreak, first shitty apartment and soul-sucking job, first therapy session to work through those mommy issues. Can she turn her quarter-life crisis into a revolution? Maybe. Will she make some questionable decisions along the way? Definitely. All episodes of Queenie premiere June 7th, streaming on Hulu.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
The Real Housewives is a guilty pleasure for most. But if you're looking to not feel guilty about that pleasure, tune in to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino, where I break down all the messy moments and behind-the-scenes antics of Bravo's popular franchise. And on Everything Iconic, I also interview celebrity guests like Kelly Ripa, Keke Palmer, Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and more about their guilty pleasures, their past work, and so much more. So if you're pop culture obsessed and find yourself watching way too much reality TV like me, tune in to Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Tell me what you think I should do.
Welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships, and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And we are back for sloppy seconds with the one and only Helen Thorne, all the way from the U of the K.
G'day, London. Yeah. G'day, London. G'day.
Oh, my God. I just watched Mission Impossible with the kids the other night. And, of course, because I think the second one's set in Sydney. So they really ramp up the Australian, like, accent. Like, everything's, g'day, mate.
It's oh, my God.
Oh, it's so jarring.
Yeah, there's always that cringe, isn't there? But also, how I describe it, I ock up, get a bit more ocker.
Yeah.
Every time I see an Australian.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm a terrible parrot. It's awful, awful behavior. I'm really embarrassing.
Which is weird because you sound very English these days. But anyway, this will bore the shit out of the listeners. This is just for you and I. Let's go back. For those who haven't listened to your first episode, can we do a quick recap? I mean, it's quite a story. Would you like to do it?
Oh. Yeah, let's just... God, the gruesome highlights of my life in the last 3.5 years. Well, listener, 3.5 years ago, I found out that my ex-husband was a first-class CUNT, and I found out he'd been having an affair for 4 years. Bit of a shocker, bit of a surprise. My life kind of exploded. It was the pandemic, got a bit messy.
Yeah,
hit the booze, really enjoyed my fags, had all the crashes.
Yeah.
But then, like a terrible metaphor of the bushfire, and then the green shoots appeared.
Yeah.
About 6 months later, started getting my mojo back again.
Yeah.
And then slowly rebuilt myself. Was an excellent slag. Was a fantastic slag. Really good at sex, turns out.
Yeah.
Had a real thirst for it.
Yes. Well, which will happen, quite frankly, when you're in a less than desirable relationship where you've been made to feel less than. And I think this is a really interesting part of your story, because you got together with your ex-husband in your late teens, which is also the experience of many of the listeners. To be frank, you didn't know any different.
No.
And as horrendous as, you know, finding out at the start of lockdowns that your husband of 20 years has had an affair for four of those years and all the shit that ensued, what it also meant is that Helen in her 40s had the opportunity to work out what she fucking liked.
Yeah.
And what she deserved.
Yeah, that was a joy. That was the gift. That was the hidden bonus. Who knew of absolute heartbreak and betrayal? Nah. And you know, and as soon as I started just doing tiny little things, it wasn't like one day I clicked my fingers and went, oh my God, I've got this amazing life. It was a slow build going, oh, I could cook whatever dinner I want. I can,
and I'll do this.
I'll put up this painting. I'll recreate my home, my life. You know, all those are things. And also, and I've spoken about this a lot, is that I suddenly saw my friendship group in a whole new light. Like I loved my friends, and I loved and I valued things that, you know, meant so much to me, because I wasn't expending all this useless time on a narcissist, a complete fun vacuum. And I was pouring all this love into a relationship that was obviously never going to work. But I was a trier, Nellie.
A trier, but also I think it's, you know, obviously we know each other very well, and I think I've fallen victim to this, and I think you did it. I don't think it's too harsh to say both of us, perhaps, and many listeners, were more invested in the idea than the reality, you know. So you're actually trying to keep the family unit together. You're trying to keep this marriage going. I mean, for many of those years, against evidence.
Yeah, you know.
And the effort that requires of you, you're now putting into, like you say, it could be something like you painted the banister, or you decide to assemble an IKEA shelf, or in your case, you start running, or you start dating, or like, for listeners, I want you to remember, and I don't think you'll mind me saying this, you were fucking broken. Like, you were... Yeah. Devastated, and in that kind of I'll never feel better space.
And
actually, within, I would say, 12 to 18 months, you were a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest learning, or, you know, the biggest challenge for me at that time was asking for help.
Yes.
Because I was like, no, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm a coper.
Yep. Don't worry about me. No. Keep your lasagna. I'm all right. Yeah. All right. Don't worry. Got my happy face on today, Dals. It's all right.
I'm smoking a pack of fags, drinking a bottle of gin, and trying to run, but I'm fine.
I'm really, you know what? Couldn't be better.
Yeah.
This is what I wanted. Yes, good.
Can I just pause there for a minute? Because, again, like all competent women, but probably competent humans, that is an intellectual exercise, not a reality. Can I just invite people listening, listen to your body, okay? So if your body, if you're putting shit into your body to that degree, if you're like suddenly going, right, I'm going to smoke a pack of fags a day and you didn't before, and I'm going to drink more, or I'm going to eat this, or those changes, your body's saying something's wrong. This is my alarm system going off.
Yeah. As I like to say, I was putting things in every hole.
Yeah.
filling those gaps, papering over the cracks, all my cracks.
But on a positive note, right, even for someone who'd been in a relationship since they were 19, dating again, having sex with other people again, you realise, because a lot of relationships, people come out of them thinking, quite frankly, I'm bad at sex, or I'm not sexy, or this is an important part of my life. None of those things are true when you have the opportunity to explore that freely.
Yeah. And that was an extraordinary, not that, I mean, you know, of course you seek validation from others. You want someone to tell you you're sexy, because that's a hard thing to say when you've gone from feeling less than to kind of going, Jesus, this is a bit of all right, you know, have a ride. So I think one of the things I decided when I, because I really, my libido got switched on, and some people talk about this, you know, the fire that after a grief or a loss. And I interviewed a woman the other day who said after her husband died, she was quite confronted with the urges that she had. And I get it's primal.
Yes.
It's primal to feel that, you know, it's such a human need just to be held.
Yes.
And I was saying, like, sometimes I would have one night stands just for the cuddles. And I know that's not pretty, but I think it's better I'm honest about that, because I know that people go into dating apps with that kind of cavalier, like, oh, it's fine, I'm feeling free, I feel like a teenager again. When essentially on Friday night, you'd like someone to bloody stroke your hair and eat ice cream with on the sofa.
You want to be spooned.
You're not ready for the emotional attachment. Yeah. I think, you know, you can confuse all those feelings, and that's so normal. That's so real.
I tell you what, you talk to, and I've had a few friends who've done sex work, as I'm sure you have, you talk to any sex worker, and they will tell you that there is a huge wave of clients paying literally for that, you know, like where you think, oh, it's all focused on orgasm, it's all focused on sex, they're going to want, I don't know, a blowjob, whatever it is. It's like, can you please talk to me and hold my hand for an hour, or spoon me?
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. Like, that need for human connection is not quite universal, but almost.
Yeah. And one of the things I've learned amongst my single women, single parenting community, and we talk about this quite honestly, is that when coupled friends, very well-meaning, loving coupled friends, say to you, you just need time alone. You need to learn to be by yourself. Don't rush. Yeah. I'm like, fuck you. Yeah. Fuck off.
Says you with your Haagen-Dazs and bloody Love Actually on Saturday night.
No. Yeah. And to any listener out there who's got friends going like that, don't feel guilty. Don't feel the shame that couples put on you for these feelings. Because I think that, you know, they haven't walked a mile in your shoes, and also your sexual energy is confronting for them.
Yes.
And that's the thing that I've found in the last 3.5 years. And I'm going to be that prick. I'm writing a new book, Nelly. I'm going to drop it in now. Bang.
Of course you are. It'll be in the show notes.
And I'm writing a chapter called Are You Coming With Me?
Yeah.
Which is about this notion, is that when you start to change and transform and get more confident, and you have these new experiences in life, some of your friends won't like it, and the status in your relationship and your friendship will start to shift. And some friends will go, yay, look at you shine. And other friends going, hang on, you were that dowdy friend who was a bit needy, and now, and that can be, you know, that could fuck people off.
I think especially if it's hitting a raw nerve for them. So if you're in the situation, and anyone in middle age will be in this situation, where you've got friends who have companionate marriages, and they may be happy with having a companionate marriage. It may be sexless or very low sex and companionate, and that's the trade-off they make, and they're happy with that. Having said that, sitting in front of single Helen going, yes, had this, you know, great like sexual experience that I've never had before on Friday night at the age of 45 or whatever it is, that can really challenge that status quo. Like just your presence can challenge that.
Yeah. And I think so. And also I've never wanted to, you know, I've been excited about these new experiences.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, and happy about that. And I know, and I know that that's, and sometimes it's really hard supporting friends when they're going through these blowouts, and you're like, yeah, should you meet that guy from Tinder 3 hours after you matched with him? Is he going to murder you? I've, you know, yes. like, so yes. I think that's, you know, there's so much love that comes from that and that care. But I think it is, it's one of those big shake-up times in your life. I think it's, you know, it's healthy to have a big shake-up in your life, because I guess as we all discover, we know who our best friends are. We know who are our support crew, and it can be really liberating and hurtful. But I think, but also you get to know who you are in this sort of unexpected way, which is which is great. There's only good that can come from it.
Well, and you know, that all of us would have been through that situation, and you would have been that at 19, given that that's when you met your then, you know, who went on to become your husband. Like, if you're a group of single friends and you couple up, you can also be very confronting in that group. And basically what we're saying is everyone's projecting their own shit, and it's not your shit. You know, like, if you meet a happy couple, because you're now in a happy couple, if you meet a happy couple and your feeling is, why don't I have that? That's not fair. You know, who does she think she is? What is he? He's probably not even that good. Girlfriend, assess your own mental health.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly. And if you sit with a single friend and you're married and you're like, oh, well, look at her getting all of that, and, you know, mate, have a look at your marriage.
Yeah, right. Just flip it around a bit.
Just look in that mirror just a little bit. Now, you get to ask me a question in a minute, but I cannot leave the listeners hanging with this story without, because last time you were on, I think you had maybe just started this new relationship, but it was very new, and you had told, you know, that really difficult rebuilding story. And that story did involve at various times the idea of, pretty much as we all go through, I think I might be on my own forever. I don't think I can do this again. Maybe there's no one for me. You know, all of the things that we experience when we go through divorce. Yeah. Turns out Helen's in love.
Oh my god. Yes. All right. This is, you know, start the music.
Yeah,
I'm so in love. And good proper, you know, love meme love, you know.
Oh, like love song love. So you met on Tinder?
Oh, on Bumble. Oh no,
on Bumble?
Yes. We'd matched on Tinder previously. Yeah. But we met properly when we matched on Bumble. And, oh, my God, he's just the love of my life. He is divine. And it's we're celebrating our one-year anniversary in New York.
Oh, my God.
In a month's time.
Can we go back to, when did you call me crying? It was either January or February 2020. When you just found a letter that revealed your fucking life had imploded.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if I had said to you then, in 3.5 years' time, you're actually going to experience love in a real sense for the first time in your life, and you will be having a one-year anniversary in New York with this guy?
Nah. I would have said, no. I would have thought it was impossible. I would have said, no, that's not, you know, because I had this idea about love and it was so destroyed. And I just thought, but I worked my hardest. And if I can't work this hard and get what I sort of thought I deserved, you know, and it was such a mess. And I thought, I could not see myself going head first into love again. And also I was starting to get really, and I think this is the cliche, I was starting to get really used to the idea. I was like, I don't need to live with someone again. I've got this lovely house. I've got, you know, my kids and a job I love. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really looking for it. And then I just remember on the first day, and I saw him, I went, uh-oh, here we are. Like,
oh,
it was so different. It was so different from any other meeting.
Yeah.
And, I just adore him, and we've worked really hard and at you know, communicating, but it's felt easy. It's felt
and natural. I remember the first date. Like, tell me if I've got this one wrong. Dear listener, Thorny and I ring each other when we go on a date and unpack it. You guys met at a pub and just kissed for like an hour.
Yes. So our first date, we just met for a couple of hours. The kids were coming back at 7. I met him at 5. We'd been texting sort of on and off for about 6 weeks. He'd gone on holiday. I was running a marathon. I was like, oh, I'm going to be no fun. So let's meet after that. And he just lived down the road. And we met in the pub, which is like 5 minutes each from our house. And and we just had like an atomic kiss. You know, where you feel like it's like
it was awesome.
A massive snog. And then he walked me home, to the top of my street. And I was like, oh, can we see each other again? And he's like, yes. And so I waited a whole week until I saw him again. Holy shit. Everything was on fire that week. Oh, my God.
Your spaces were activated.
Yes, I gave myself RSI in one hand. Honestly, the anticipation.
But again, for people listening who are going back into dating, I think this is also really interesting because by then you'd had a couple of years of pretty regular dating. Like you really went on a mission to explore that side of like dating, sex, meeting up, meeting new people, all of that kind of stuff.
You knew
this one was different.
Oh, and I never believed when people said, when you know, you know, you just know. And I was like, oh, no, I don't know. And then I was like, oh, no, you're right. You're completely correct.
Yeah.
And all the feels and all the sort of, yes, me too. And just feeling myself, like feeling, not that bad, wait, later. But just feeling I could just be authentically me. Like, you know, I had sort of younger guys and all sorts of stuff where, you know, I'm a, you know, performer and people pleaser. Yeah. So I can kind of, and I did that thing of morphing myself and.
You can turn it on.
And yeah. This I just felt just 100% me with him and just so excited to meet someone. I was like, oh, there are kind men out there. There are kind souls. And
of course there are.
Divine.
Let me ask you this, because even though you're supposed to ask me, I'm not going to pass up this opportunity because I think this is fascinating. It seems to me, again, correct me if I'm wrong, you have just, without knowing, actually fallen in love for the first time in your 40s. So what you thought was a marriage that was loving was not.
Yeah. No. And the love I felt in the last year is infinitely greater than any of the love put together in 22 years. And it's, but also, and which I kind of feel fortunate to fall in love in my 40s because my priorities have shifted in terms of the partner I'm looking for. And I'm so grounded in my career and being a mom, and I'm not looking for a partner to have children with. I'm not looking for a partner for financial security. I'm not looking for any of those things. I just want someone to bring me joy.
There's no agenda.
That is liberating. And that is exciting because it's just this, it's a pure kind of love. If that doesn't, that sounds awful, but it's a love without the weight of expectations.
I think the way I think of it, you know, we talk a lot on the podcast about ripping up the script. The script's already been ripped up, right? Because you're middle-aged and divorced, and that's meant to be a tragedy, and you're meant to never recover and all the things that we hear in, you know, in the ether. So that's already been ripped up. So this idea of, well, I need a partner for financial security. I need children. I need the approval of my parents. I need the neighbors to see me as a family unit. Oh, well, all that shit's already gone. So in that sense, the love that can develop is actually pure, you know, because you can disentangle it from other people's expectations.
Yeah. And it's divine. And then what's been nice in the last, especially in the last few months, when, you know, we've started going to things as a couple and everyone loves him. And I love that they love him. And I, you know, I sort of want to skip down the street going, this is my boyfriend. Yeah. I'm so he's a joy to share with everyone, and my kids love him so much, and he's been so sweet. And we waited 7 months before we introduced the kids, and we were really gentle. And then this week, for the first time, so it's been 11 months, he stayed over while the kids were here. And last night, we played Monopoly. We ate ice cream. Bought ice cream over. You know, he rang ahead and said to my my big teen, "What's your favorite ice cream? I'll bring that over." Just these little beautiful sort of
lovely
gestures.
Yeah,
and sat down with my eldest and went through her art book, and you know, took time. And these sort of beautiful gestures have meant so much to me, but also to the kids, because they just said, "We feel like we're the priority here." And I said, "You are
the priority." Yes, and for people listening, and I think this is relevant, he doesn't have kids. Because sometimes we hear like, oh, the only, particularly if we're talking about men, the only men who know how to do that are fathers. That's not true. He knows how to nurture. He was obviously very patient. It's not like he pushed it and went, right, I've got to meet them. They've got to be my best friends, you know, or don't you, like, you give up time with them to see me. Like, he's done all the green flags.
Yeah. And I think, and the kids feel listened to and respected, and you know, and especially in the first meetings, like we would stand quite separately.
Yeah.
And now, you know, he's going, you know, going, he'll give me a kiss and a cuddle. But we're really respectful of that sort of not being too amorous. And
yes.
Kids get that effort, you know, they get that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really. And they'll say, oh, you know, is he coming for Christmas now? And so that's all been quite gentle and organic and led by them. And I think, but then that's good, because it feels like then that does mean commitment and long-term and trust. And
it's more sustainable. And they also, let's be really clear, they definitely notice the opposite. Like, we had one caller who's new, I mean, whose ex and his new girlfriend basically had very loud sex, and it upset the kids, and the kids tried to talk to him about it, and he just basically went, too bad. And that's fucked, right? Like, you don't have to pretend to be flatmates, but you also, like, rubbing their face in it is also not okay.
No. And I just, I find really upsetting, because there's plenty of time. You can, you know, when you can go off and have a shag, you know,
yes. And it doesn't make them like prudish or selfish. It's actually completely developmentally normal for the kids to kind of go, oh, I don't know about like seeing mum pashing someone. Like, at least let them get used to the new person and the nature of the relationship and all that kind of, like, be sensitive to what's happening for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, because my kids are 14 and 12. So, you know, they're really fun to hang out with. Like, as a four, we've been to a festival, we go to the cinema, we're going out for dinner.
Yeah.
And we can have a lot of fun. It's not like they're toddlers and, you know, I mean, not that matters, but, you know, the time in my life with the kids at the moment, it's really fun, and I really, really enjoy hanging out together as four. It just feels like mates. Yeah. And so that's been good, but it's just sort of, it is time. And also the nature of my work, because I go on tour.
Yeah.
So 9 months of the year. So I'm away like two or three nights a week. We've had to do this relationship quite slowly.
Yeah.
And I might see him about once a week, and it's an intensity on a different kind of level, because we really miss each other. And then when we see each other, we'll go, this feels like a treat.
We'll go and
do something together.
And the excitement's still there, and the frisson. And this is why I'm all for, you know, when callers call in and they're like, oh, should I try long distance, or this person lives an hour and a half away? I'm like, do it. Like, that means if you see each other a couple of nights a month, they'll be the best bloody nights of your month.
Wowzers,
you know?
Goodness me. Yeah.
Like, that kind of anticipate, even just on a sexual level, but I mean even emotionally as well, and all the thing. It's like you can actually really put the effort into connecting if you keep the domesticity out of it for a while and let that grow.
Yeah, I know. And all that can wait. All that, you know, I sort of think like, you know, I don't – one of the things I rejoiced in after I got divorced was like, I don't have to wash anyone else's socks or pants. Yeah. I don't have to do all that sort of thing. Not that I ever would, I think, with my partner now, because he's so, you know, I blink and he's made the bed. I blink and he's done the dishes. Like, he's just a different guy. But it's, you know, I think I love our current life, and I do know what I'm like, because obviously you know what I'm like.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be on your third date and you're like, I mean, should I wear cream or ivory at the wedding? Like, you know, like, oh my God.
But so, do you know what? Really, I can't tell you, and I'm sure there'd be so many listeners, and if you didn't listen to your, if you haven't listened to Helen's first episode, please go back and do that, because I can't tell you, like, the difference. It's hard for me to convey, as someone who's so close to you, it's hard for me to convey the difference in you. And I don't just mean post-divorce. I mean even when you were married, you know, you were not, the way I think of it, you were not shining. You were not in a situation that brought out the best in you. You were always wonderful and I've always adored you, but you were clearly being held back. And to be in a situation that was so awful, your divorce was so one of the harder ones that I've heard of, even in this kind of role, and how desperately broken you felt, to now hearing you talk about having this much love in your life, and found the guy on Bumble. Can I say that again? For all of those who are experiencing the heteropessimism of going, there's no good men and where the fuck are they and all that kind of stuff. Well, if you can find one, so can they.
Yeah.
It's possible. Yeah. It's not guaranteed, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah. And my brother met his wife on Bumble. So my mum now thinks it's this magic.
Now, normally with sloppy seconds, I let you ask me a question, but I think we've spent so much time on talking about you, which I'm more than happy about. With your permission, unless it's a burning question, you can do it in Thirsty Thirds instead.
Right. Okay. I'll hold on to it then.
Or would you like to ask it? Because you can, since I've given you that homework.
Oh, no. Look, all I was going to ask was something we covered anyway, was about your advice for people going through changes and how to deal with friendships when you get stronger. And I think we kind of covered that. I keep getting asked from people who follow me about divorce as well, because I think that's the hardest thing, when you get excited about your new life and people don't share that enthusiasm. And I think that is hard, because sometimes that feels like a second betrayal.
And can feel very isolating. I reckon there's, I mean, at the extreme end, you're probably going to lose some friends. That's the truth.
Yeah.
That I would say that means those friendships probably weren't, either they'd run their course or they were situational, you know, they were couple friends, you know, in the way that maybe you have school parent friends that primary school's done, so is your friendship. It doesn't mean anyone's a terrible person. It just means that situation was the glue rather than the relationship. But I think on that basic level, if you're, like, let's say in your situation, if you're saying to someone, oh, my God, I've found this new guy, I'm totally in love, I'm experiencing this for the first time, if they can't be happy with you, stay away from them. Like, you might come back to them later, but don't keep going back in to get punched in the face emotionally.
No, because I think one of the things I'm now acutely aware of is my nervous system.
Yes.
And you really nailed it in terms of, you know, how I was in my marriage. And I didn't realize I basically lived in fight or flight for about 20 years. Will he like this dinner? You know, is this good enough? And I didn't feel good enough. There was no point. Every time I went to him with good news or anything, go, yeah, but you could have done that better, or I wouldn't have cooked the broccoli like that. It was that those small slaps, small cuts that just and I have to say, listener, it's hard to get that out of your nervous system. That will take time.
Yeah.
And even last year I was painting my staircase like a bright yellow. And I made a mistake. I put some paint on the wall and I went, oh God, he's gonna hate that. And
yeah.
I just for a second went, how is my brain still operating like this 2.5 years later? He's gonna come home and tell me off.
Yeah.
And that will take time to get rid of.
Get rid of the process.
Yeah.
Let alone that deeper stuff of, oh, maybe I'm not attractive enough. Or maybe I'm not interesting enough. Maybe I'm not good at sex. Maybe I should, you know, all the things that if we've got a couple of wines under our belt and we're with good friends that we confess that we may not even be aware of. If you're meeting that now, don't replicate that again in a new relationship or even in friendships. If I come to you and go, Thorny, I went on this date and it was so fabulous and I'm feeling elated. If you can't meet me there, I'm not going to tell you again.
No.
Simple as that. No. And you can make a decision how egregious it is. You might need to leave that friendship, or you might go, okay, I don't go to that friend with that.
Yes. I think that's right, because it's just you can't change someone. You can't it's like I was like pouring water into a sieve.
Yeah.
You will get, but it won't stick.
No.
And it's and you have to let that go. You have to let those sort of like yeah.
And if it's, I think, if it's a friendship that's really, or a relationship or a family or whatever, any kind of relationship that it's really important to you, then you're going to have to, you know, put your big girl pants on, do the hard thing and sit down and go, you know what? When I talk to you about this, I feel that you're responding like this and it hurts me.
Yeah.
So what's going on? You know, like you're actually going to have to name it or that shit festers. And you lose that person or they lose you.
Yeah. And then it turns into contempt. And we all
they might not even know they're doing it. Like they might. Yes. Let's go back to that situation where, for example, if someone's in a marriage that isn't doing very well, they might not even be conscious of how much your presence is disrupting them and triggering them. Whereas once you call it, they might go, ooh. I am actually bringing something to this conversation I hadn't even realized.
Yeah. That's good. And I think those sort of hard conversations, as well as, you know, we spend probably weeks preparing for them.
Oh, ruminating.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Before I say that, they'll say this and all that sort of stuff. And we all know you'll all feel better for it, you know, and sometimes it's those, you know, late night Chardonnays and you go, oh mate, you know, is everything okay? Sometimes when I talk about this, I don't feel like you're happy for me or whatever. And they can be really, you can get closer because of them, which is wonderful.
Look, I think they'll either tell you to fuck off in their own way, right? Yes. And in some ways that might need to happen. Like you might need to actually lose that friendship and or lose it for a period of time or forever. Or exactly what you said, they might then go, oh, I didn't even realize. Like, you know, it's no different to a romantic relationship. Can they sit with your feelings? If you're going, I feel like you're not happy for me, if they're going to get defensive and shut down or tell you you're stupid or you're too sensitive or whatever, well, is that even a good friendship?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, then it comes back to, you know, when I was talking about love, does it feel easy? Does it feel natural?
Yeah.
Does it feel like they got your back?
Yes. No. Yes.
Are they out there going, you're going to be great and your happiness is my happiness?
Go shine. If you're walking on eggshells, you're not walking on sunshine.
No.
I'm walking on sunshine. Oh. Right. Are you ready for some listener calls? Oh, my God. Oh, you're going to love this.
Oh, yes, please. I love your listeners.
Hey, Nelly. It's Lizzie and sister, won't mention name. I love your podcast and have done since I heard you speaking about it on Radio National. Went straight to it, loved it, listened to it, put my sister onto it. She loves it. I think she sent you maybe an unreadable issue. But anyway, for her birthday, we came down on Saturday night from Sydney to see the show, and it was so much fun. Such a lovely atmosphere, full of great, lovely people. And what was really good is you looked so happy and pretty, and hopefully you're feeling much better than when you shared with us in that episode where you weren't feeling so great. I hope things like the show you that whole room full of people love you, people who actually know you in life and who love you from the podcast. Okay, thank you, Nelly. Bye.
Get out of town. She makes me cry.
That is gorgeous. I love you, that lady. Oh, my God.
I love that lady and her sister. And now I'm like, oh, my God, they came. So we did a live show in Melbourne last week. They must have come all the way from Sydney, you know, to watch the live show. And you know what it's like. You do live shows as well and in a similar kind of area, really. And to have this sort of experience of this group of people who feel like on some level they've found like a place to land, you know, like a community.
Yes, yeah. That is it. You got to find your tribe. And I think that's the first thing that happens when you go through any big life change.
Yeah.
Is that you feel like I'm the only one. Like, yes. This isn't normal. And there's a disconnect.
Yes.
There's a real disconnect with yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're the path ahead has just been, you know, destroyed.
Mm.
And you're sort of in this kind of weird abyss where you everything is thrown up in the air.
Yeah.
Everything doesn't feel right. There's no normal anymore. No. And then when you start getting those sweet connections with people, and then people start saying that, you know, when you get the goosebumps when people say something that resonates with your feelings, it's really powerful. It's really powerful.
Yeah.
You do good, Nelly. You do good in the world.
But I think it's also, it's one of those things where it really is, speaking of relationships, it is a relationship, you know, like even the fact that she as a listener and in this case an audience member is like caring for me, is referencing, you know, an episode, well, I don't know, 10, however many episodes ago when I was going through a really hard period and sort of shared that, and that her kind of, that's in her mind, and her kind of going, I love seeing you on stage being shiny Nelly in your bloody undies, you know?
Oh, God.
You know, it's not a me giving, it's a circular thing, you know, it's an energy that's created between me and them, and same with you and your audience. Maybe we start with the vulnerability, like we lead with it, but then it comes back, you know. It's this sort of theory of abundance, like more is more.
Yes, bring everyone to the table, and I
come
think,
on, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's been a joy for me to see.
Yeah.
I remember you called me on that Christmas day a couple of years ago.
Oh.
And I remember grabbing my bottle of Prosecco.
Yeah.
And I'm like, babe, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
And you sat on that balcony and we knew life was going to change.
Yeah.
And it was hard and it was shit. And it was how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And how are the kids going to be?
Yeah.
How am I going to manage it financially? All of the list.
All of it.
That's hard.
Yeah.
But you knew that going forward in the current situation was going to be worse than the unknown.
Oh, I mean, I think I described it to you that day, like I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
I couldn't breathe. You know, and we often, when we get callers kind of going, I don't know when to leave or when to call it, to me that's like really clear sign. And of course I was breathing or I'd be dead. But do you know what I mean? Like if you feel like you feel that kind of tension in your chest and throat, where you just like I'm kind of gasping for air literally and metaphorically. And then to go from that to, you know, what that caller has seen, what I see in you, what she sees in me, my hope is that that shows the possibilities of that journey. It's not all easy. We know that. Like, it's not all bloody beer and Skittles, there's no doubt.
No, but there's no magic pill.
There's no magic pill, but it is also possible to feel happy again and to feel joy and to cope with the hardships of life and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think your resilience grows. Like, you still will get hurt, and God damn it, your ex will fuck you off. They will fuck you off. Always.
Yeah.
Always fuck you off.
Yeah. All right, we've got another listener call. Are you ready? And thank you to our first caller, and thank you for taking the time to ring in with something so lovely. It's made my day. All right, so this, you're going to love this one, Thorny. You ready?
Go for it.
Hi, Nellie. This is Anne. I'm on the Gold Coast, and I listen to all your shows. And I have a question / shout out to listeners. I'm wondering if anyone else is in the same category, stage of life as me. I am very early 50s, 53, and that makes me nearly mid 50s. Okay, let's stick with 50. And I have two teenagers at home, still at school, years 10 and years 11, but I also have two kids from my previous marriage, and I have two grandkids, and I feel like it's relentless. So, and I feel like no one else really understands what it's like to essentially have had two different families, and now I'm expected, conditioned to enjoy all the time with my grandkids, but I'm still raising my own kids. I have a husband, he's wonderful, so it's not like I'm doing this alone, but I just feel like I want some time for me. When's it time for me? And I don't know anyone else who's in the same situation as me. And I was wondering if there's any other listeners out there who are, or if you know anyone, or if any of your guests on the show know anyone in this sort of situation. And also, how do I get over feeling guilty that I don't really want to spend one day a week with my grandkids, or even every second weekend, look after them, whatever it is, because we're conditioned that that's what grandparents should love doing. But I'm still running around after kids with a social life because one of them can't drive yet. So look forward to hearing your thoughts on that one. Oh, and on a side note, in case anyone thinks the school years are hard, I've had a kid in school every single year since 1998, and I've still got 2 years to go after this one. So cheers to that. Thanks, Nellie. Love what you're doing. Bye.
Oh, Jesus.
I love you so much.
I know.
Most generous, giving,
yeah,
putting everyone before you.
Yeah.
And you've had enough.
Fair, you've had enough.
You've had enough. You've given.
Yeah.
You've given some.
I'm going to kick this off, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts. It reminded me immediately about, geez, it'd be 10 years ago now. I was in Bali. We're on a family holiday in Bali and met this couple who were probably in their 70s, and they spent 4 months of every year in Bali. And I was asking them about, like, you know, lifestyle and whatever. Like, we were in a cheap area, so it would have been relatively affordable, like a country area, and how it worked with grandkids. And they said that they had seven grandkids. They sat down, their three children, and they said, we're going to be really honest with you. Like, we parented all of you to the best of our ability. We're really dedicated parents. We're not doing that again. So when we're in Australia, we will absolutely see the grandkids and we'll stay in touch with them and we'd love to hang out with them, but we will not be doing childcare, and these are the reasons why. And I'm like, praise Jesus. Like, don't just do it because you don't know what everyone's expectations are. Like, I personally have no expectation that grandparents will do childcare, but other people do. So have the conversation. And in their case, I think they then bring the grandkids to Bali for a week or something. You know, like, they kind of make, it's not like they've gone, right, we're out.
Yeah.
They're also unapologetically going, this is our time. These are our golden years. I do not want to do childcare 2 days a week.
And yeah, that's absolutely it. The thing that comes to mind is the great saying is choose guilt over resentment.
Oh, tell me about that. So instead of I'll take the kids on for 2 days and fucking seethe and hate them and hate you for wanting me to do it, go no, and you'll feel guilty for a bit.
Yeah, you'll feel guilty, but you won't feel as shit as you do because the resentment will, the guilt will fade, but the resentment will build.
Choose guilt over resentment because the guilt will fade, the resentment will build. That could there be any truer expression?
And I think it, I can't remember if it was Brené Brown or Glennon Doyle who said it. Yeah. I just think that you, it is so powerful. And I heard it recently and I thought, fucking yes. Because when I want to say yes to everybody, I want to be everybody's friend. That is my, that is my, not weakness, it's just who I am.
Yeah.
That's just who I am. And I want to be able to help everyone.
Yeah.
But I don't want to feel resentment in any relationship.
No.
That is unhealthy. Mm. And I love, was it Jane Fonda who recently said, no is a complete sentence.
Complete sentence. And guess
not,
what?
But,
you are in your mid 40s. I'm in my late 40s. Our caller's in their early, I'm going to still say early 50s at 53. We have tried the people pleasing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. If people, and I'm not suggesting your children are going to do this, caller, but the more you give, the more people take. That's how it goes. Like a taker doesn't stop and go, oh, I've had enough. They keep taking. So the only person who can change this is you. Stop giving it.
Yeah.
It's completely reasonable to sit down with your adult children and say, kids, I'm still parenting. I can't also take on childcare. I can be nana or grandma or whatever and have fun with them and do movie night every 2 weeks or something like that, but I can't be your childcare.
No, and this is my time.
It's my time. And when it's your time, I want you to take that too, you know?
Yeah,
and sure, if they need their tonsils out or you get sick, of course I'll be there.
Yeah, you know,
that's a different thing to a regular accumulation of resentment. Darling caller, you are done. We can hear it in your voice. You're done. You've done
that's
your time.
Yeah, exactly. And you're doing well. And you know, it might be if you're doing four weeks a month, just do three or start just gradually build up. One of the things that a friend of mine told me and it really stung was that she said, people pleasing is lying.
Yeah, it
you're
is.
Not really telling the truth.
Nope.
You're not really being authentically yourself and you're not, you're saying yes out of obligation, not yes out of love.
Yep.
And I think that is, and it's hard because we're ingrained as, you know, we've been told to be the good girl. And that, I think that I find, you know,
hard.
To be the good girl. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is hard.
Yeah.
And it's that
he can do it though. I know.
You can do it. And even if you want to think like if it's easier for you to think of yourself as a role model, then think about that. Like what are you modeling to your children and grandchildren about the expectations of women at your age as well? Let me give you another concrete example because I think she's asking for like pragmatic examples. A friend of mine, her mum, long story, but her mum got divorced from her dad, ended up in a long-term relationship with a woman. They're still together some 30 years later or something like that. The two women, so the two nanas, have their five grandkids, maybe it's seven, I can't remember, quite a lot. They have them for dinner every Wednesday night, right? Lovely. So they literally get, however they get all the kids from school, they go over to their house on a Wednesday night. They have dinner. The cousins hang out. That, I mean, I don't even think you have to do that weekly, but that's enough, caller. Like maybe if you go to your kids with a plan, if you kind of go, I want to do Friday night movie nights with the kids or Sunday afternoon. Yeah. or this often you need to work out for yourself how often you can do it. But rather than a kind of, oh, I don't want to do it, say what you can do.
Mm. Yeah. And I
would
it.
Love that.
Yeah. 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 And yeah. And it's all possible. It's all possible. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe, and don't expect or don't anticipate that they're going to hate you or it's somehow going to damage the relationship. Mm. They might go, oh, I didn't realize you felt this way.
Yeah.
Because you haven't spoken up.
Or they might even go, Mama wasn't even expecting you to. You know, like exactly. We're never knowing that when we're ruminating, we don't know how much is conditioning, how much is projection, how much. And indeed, if you do present that to your kids and they do arc up, we'll let them arc up. They'll get over it.
Yeah.
Have another conversation and talk to them about you as a human being, not as a servant.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. We love you.
Yeah,
love
I reckon go for it. All right, we're going to finish up with big mistake. So in your experience and for listeners, of course, we're going to put links into the show notes to your first book, Get Divorced, Be Happy. Also to your wonderful podcast, Scummy Mummies, which covers a lot of this area turf as well and a lot more parenting stuff. You're in this ether. So what's the biggest mistake you see, do you think, in dating and relationships?
I think the biggest mistake in dating in relationships is, and I've thought about this a lot, is again, like your listener said, being afraid in the early stages to say your real feelings.
Yes.
And because especially if you haven't been loved properly for a long time,
yeah,
if you are projecting so much onto this new relationship, you hold back the crazy. You hold back. You can hold back things that down the line. And it sort of, it does echo a bit with, it's funny, it echoes a bit with your caller.
Yeah.
But don't be afraid to go, this doesn't quite feel right. Or when you said that, you know, that made me feel a bit sad. Because that will build and then you'll have this almighty crash and that other person go, hey, hang on. If you'd said 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But because then it's almost like a micro betrayal.
Yeah.
Because then if you bring that, like, I've been thinking this for 6 months and you've done this.
Yeah.
Then they can't change what happened 3 months ago, but they can going forward.
So I saw this with a friend, Thorny, with someone, a friend of mine, and I'll obviously anonymize, was seething because the person that she'd started dating hadn't changed their relationship status on Facebook. And I'm like, I don't even know how to do that. So if I'm dating someone and they're thinking, oh, Nellie's not updating her relationship status because she's ashamed of our relationship or she's hiding it away, I wouldn't even know that was going on in their mind.
Oh, God.
I'm
oh,
like,
God.
You have got to talk to that person. And so, like, they might not have ever had a relationship status on Facebook. And all of a sudden you're telling yourself a story that they're hiding it, that you're shameful, that you're not good looking enough. That whatever the fucking story you're telling yourself, and it's a complete projection. Raise it.
Yes, exactly. And get used to saying, is it okay? I'm just going to, you know, I know it's hard. It's really hard to start those conversations, but it shouldn't come out of like a burst valve.
No, that's right. When you blow and then it comes out all wrong. And I think you're right in terms of hiding your own stuff as well. Like I remember being in a dating situation, you know this about me. I have really chronic anxiety if I don't know where I am, right? So let's say if you and I went to Sydney and you went, well, let's just wander down there and find a pub. Like I can't do that. You know, I need to look it up. I need to know where I'm going, where it is in relation to the hotel that we're staying at, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was talking to a previous guest about that. That would be something that I would hide. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I go, you need to know this about me because I'm nearly 50 and that part of me I think's baked in, you know. Yeah. So I'm not going to make you pay for the Uber. But I am going to need to get an Uber to that pub, or I'm going to need to see on the map exactly how far it is and where we are. And that's, you're just going to, that's one of my quirks you're going to have to deal with. And I'll deal with some of yours. Whereas I would have hidden that because it's embarrassing.
Oh, but it's lovely. And I think that's, there's obviously some, you know, that's a bit of security and safety stuff. And that, okay.
Yeah.
I was just in Berlin on the weekend, and a friend of mine lives there, and she's like, just catch the train to my house. And I took two trains in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And she's really against cabs. And I was like, I just want to take a cab to your house. It'll take half an hour. And she's like, no. And I found it so stressful. But if I had just asserted myself and said, listen, I will pay for the cab and then I'll be dropped off in a foreign city.
Yeah.
I've been up since 4:00. I've just taken a flight. Yeah. I'm really scared.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I could listen to my own advice. And then on the way home, she said, just take, you know, just run a marathon. And I was like, oh, I'll just take a cab. And she's like, no, take the train. Of course I took the wrong train.
No, I'll and get a cab.
And I ended up in rural Germany and I had to take a cab from somewhere else to the airport. Made me really stressed out.
Yeah.
So I get you, babe.
And if you hide that, and for someone else, it'll be, I can't eat, I don't know, my food has to be separate on the plate. It'll be, I don't know, we've all got a thing. I have to sit with my back toward to the wall, or, you know, I say to my kids, I have to be able to see the shooters. You know, if we're in a restaurant, like, I need to be able to see the door. Like, you know, we've all got our shit. If you hide, of course you don't want to lead with it. But if you hide too much of that when you start seeing someone, they're going to be fucking shocked 6 months in when you're going, get out the Melways and find me a new restaurant. Like, actually reveal yourself. They take it or leave it.
Yeah. Pop the pimple.
Pop
Don't
it.
Let it become a ball.
Pop it. Crack out a fart. See how it goes.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
Is that not one of the biggest dating dilemmas? At what point do you fart in front of the other person?
I did one the other night in bed, and we'd just been saying, oh, I love you so much. I love you so much. And I've been holding this farting in bed, and then my fart just went, like, I was like releasing a balloon. He's like, that was so romantic, babe. I'm like, I'm so sorry. But it was just in this silence.
So how far into this relationship did you start farting?
I think it was about 6 weeks, because I laughed and then did a pop. And I was laughing and then clapping, and he's like, nah, that was a fart. I was like, yeah, it was a fart, babe.
I distinctly remember sitting on the porch of my caravan with you when you and I laughed so much that you snorted and farted at the same time. And then I couldn't stop laughing and wet my pants. And it was such a middle-aged lady scene of just like farting, snorting, pelvic floor issue.
Oh my God. One of us just needed to break the chair. That is my fall back, break the chair. Oh my God.
No, one of us needed to go and complain about the noise at the next campsite, and then we would have been like full middle aged Karen.
Oh, Karen bingo. Absolutely.
Absolutely beautiful. Oh, Helen Thorne, I do love you so.
Oh, Nelly, you're a cup of joy. You're a superstar.
It's just beautiful for our listeners. And I know I've said it, but I'm going to say it again, because I know how deep in the shit some of our listeners are emotionally. You were there. I cannot stress this enough.
Yeah.
You were there. And like you say, just a bit by bit where you go, oh, I'm just going to go for a walk today, you know, and 6 months later, I'm going to go on a date. I'm going to register on Tinder. I'm going to see this friend I haven't seen. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to get a psychologist. I'm going to start lifting weights. None of these things happen in a week.
No.
They happen over years. And then the possibilities are endless. Yes. Look at you go. Your career's gone off. You're in love. Your kids are happy. You've got more money. You're like shining.
Yeah.
Glorious.
I feel really fortunate and you know, I have my shit days, but they don't seem so hard anymore.
No.
And I just feel such joy. And I don't have any plans. When I was married, I was like, everything was like, we'll work and then there'll be grandchildren and then retirement. I don't fucking know. Nobody knows what's going to happen next week. And that's, embrace that. That's exciting.
Is the best bit about ripping up the script, because you also stop putting your shit on others. I'm the same with my kids. I'm like, I don't know if I'll get grandkids. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know if they'll travel with me. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. Like, so I'm not putting these generational expectations on them. You know, I can just enjoy them as the human beings that they are now, in the same way that you can. And to know that it is, you know, for you, just to go back to you saying, you know, I feel very fortunate. Of course you're fortunate, but you're also, you've deliberately done this. And that's the message I want to get across to listeners. Just do a thing a day, a thing a week, anything you can to rebuild. Just do that thing. Even if it's as simple as I will cook myself a meal today. I'll get some nutrition into myself.
Yeah.
I will drink less this Friday. Yeah. I will, whatever it is, like, just give yourself, and over time, it really does add up.
Yeah, it is. And it's,
you get to a better place.
It's the only way you can do it is slowly.
Yeah.
And it's fucking frustrating. There's no time limit. And my time limit, it will be different to yours.
Yes.
But every time you choose yourself, you move that little bit more forward. You just do. And it's such investment in your happiness. And that's what you want. And also throw the measures of success out the window.
Okay? Yes.
There's no more tick boxes. There's none. None of that.
Yeah. Totally. Your script, your list. Mm. Not one of these ones that you find in the bloody Sunday magazine. Or by looking next door or whatever, because that picture that you see is not real anyway. We all know that. So actually really take that on board and live it, and be at least open to the possibility of hope.
Yeah.
You know, that things will get better. That doesn't mean I'll get a boyfriend. No. It means you'll feel better.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, at some point. Oh, we'll be getting you back on for Thirsty Thirds, but I love you so much. And
I love you.
When's your new book out and what's it called?
So I'm writing a new book called Unbroken, which I'm going to interview 100 women from around the world who've all been broken and rebuilt themselves. So be interviewing you, Nellie Thomas.
I was going to say, I better be one of those bloody women.
Fucking will be.
Fucking eight, mate. Listen to you. Now you've gone full circle. We will look out for that, but I'll also put links to your other stuff in the show notes, and everyone can follow you and buy your book. And I mean, I know so many listeners did last time as well. Absolutely glorious. So thank you, darling Helen Thorne. And you enjoy this love. I fucking love love. I couldn't love seeing you in love anymore. It's just like glorious.
It's pretty delicious.
Yeah. All right. Love you, Thorny.
Love you.
Ciao.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start again. Dear Nelly, won't you hear my request? Dear Nelly, with your fabulous gaze.